coaching track, or actually just finished coaching track. The guy that's the head coach, I'm the assistant coach, the head coach of our track team, coached Megan when she was a high school track and field athlete. And Megan, he said you were a stud. So can I tell you a really quick cop story, just in light of the cop thinking? My dad had a really incredible experience. He had a number of them, but one experience when he was in law enforcement, there was a kidnapping that occurred in the county. My dad was the undersheriff of the county, and this was Ponderay County in eastern Washington state. There was a kidnapping, and this little girl had been taken, and the whole county seemed like turned out to try and find her. He had taken her off into the woods. It was a very rural community, a lot of farmlands, a lot of national forests, and she was gone for several days. And they had scoured every place they could. The whole county was mobilized, and nobody could find her. And they were reaching kind of that desperation fear moment. And my dad was driving home at the end of a shift. And while he was driving, he clearly sensed that the Holy Spirit prompted him to go home by a different route. So he turns, he's going home by a different route and trying to get home to us. And as he's driving along, there's an old logging road that was kind of overgrown and abandoned that intersected with the main road that he was driving. And again, very clearly, he heard the Spirit say, "Turn here." So he turned down that road, drove for about a mile down this road, and saw the kidnapper crossing the street with the little girl. Got out, arrested him, took her into custody. She was covered in urine. She was just in bad shape, but okay. He had a stuffed animal of my sister's in the car with him. Wouldn't let her go until everybody was informed and was able to turn her loose. And pretty incredible to be able to be used by God in those moments. In fact, can I just say a prayer? You know, right at this moment, there are probably those kinds of tragedies happening, and there are families who have no idea what's going to happen to their child. Can we just pray one of those kind of prayers? I don't mean to throw a big downer on the Happy Mother's Day morning, but maybe this is the perfect prayer to pray on a Mother's Day. Father, you alone know what's happening right now with Amber Alerts and with these kinds of situations, and I pray that you would raise up dozens and dozens and hundreds of Shanes and men like my father and like Ron and John and others. And would you bring a positive, glorious outcome to certain current tragedies that are happening right now? Lord, we'll never know the effect of this prayer, but I pray you would just use this as a contact point and a portal to release your power into some desperate situations that truly need it. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, well, we're going to continue the Iconoclast series that we've been doing here at Grace. I'm going to let you start today in the book of Exodus chapter 20. Did any of you go out and see the movie Allegiant? Came out recently. Anybody here see Allegiant? One person? Makes sense. It was not good. You probably didn't see Allegiant unless you saw its predecessor Insurgent. And you wouldn't have seen Yes to that one too. And then you saw Divergent, what started the whole thing. Did anybody read the books? Divergent, Insurgent, Allegiant. Okay. How about Harry Potter? Anybody see a Harry Potter movie? All right, a few more. Anybody read a Harry Potter book? Okay. How about Disney's Aladdin? Surely some of you saw Aladdin. Okay, a few more. All right, let's go a little bit older school. Did anybody read Arabian Nights? Arabian Nights was the story that actually spawned the story of Aladdin. So anybody read Arabian Nights? When it first came out. Bruce, you just set yourself up with that comment, though. Let's see. How about Shallow Hal? You're going to raise your hand on that one? You saw Jack Black, Shallow Hal? Wow. Chronicles of Narnia. You saw one of the movies, one of the three movies, or you read one of the seven books? Okay. The Matrix. Everybody saw The Matrix. Okay. These stories, and tons of other movies, tons of other stories like these, have a common denominator to them. In these and other similar stories, there's a common denominator where at some point in the story, there is an element. It might be a place, it might be an object, it might be a certain interaction, but there's a place that becomes a portal to another world. There's a place that connects the characters of the story into a greater dimension than what they're currently aware of. In all of these stories, there's a whole other reality happening than what's currently confronting the main protagonist. And these portals provide an access. In Harry Potter, there's a port key, and if you grab the port key, it will whisk you away to another place. Frodo has a ring, and if he wears the ring, it allows him to see into the supernatural realm. He can see the ring wraiths for who they really are. Jack Black talks to Tony Robbins in the elevator. No, I'm not going to do Shallow Hal piece. He changes the way he views women. In the Chronicles of Narnia, it's a wardrobe. Or maybe it's not a wardrobe. Maybe it's a painting hanging on a bedroom window. And the painting whisks them into a whole new dimension. Aladdin has a lamp. And in each of these places, there's a portal that has the power to introduce them to a whole new dimension of living. There's something kind of enchanting. There's something kind of compelling about the idea, at least for me, of portals that take us to a whole other realm. In fact, at the end of the Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe movie, the professor who owns the house in which the children discover Narnia, the professor is sitting dejectedly outside the wardrobe. And we realize at the end of the movie that he tried it. You know, he heard the stories of how the wardrobe was a portal to Narnia, so he crawled in there and tried to see if he could access it. The Bible talks about certain practices that if engaged in, they become portals that introduce us to entirely new and greater dimensions of reality. Now, I say if engaged with, because the ring won't make Frodo invisible unless he puts it on. A port key won't take you anywhere unless you grab a hold of the port key. There's power inside Aladdin's lamp, but the power has to be accessed. Sometimes there's a whole new world waiting around us, but we don't even realize it. This principle that Jesus will talk about in this passage we'll get to today is a wardrobe portal. In fact, this is probably one of the most important practices that you and I could ever engage in. But you know what? We're not engaging in it at the level that we should. Now, I'm not saying that based on a bunch of research. I'm just saying it anecdotally. When I look at my life and when I look at your lives, we're not engaging with this anymore in our culture to the degree that we should. And you know what? It's hurting us. Now, we might not know that it's hurting us. If you don't know that there's a power available, you're not going to feel hurt by its absence because you don't even know it's there. If I'm walking along and there's a portal over here and I don't know that a portal's there and there's another world there, I'm not going to feel hurt by not knowing it's there. But there is something more to be experienced. And in Luke chapter 6, I know you're in Exodus 20, but in Luke chapter 6, Jesus talks about this. Jesus introduces this principle that could absolutely change our lives. He gets into a fight with the Pharisees about this. The series is called Iconoclasts. An iconoclast is someone who breaks idols. In Jesus' day, the Pharisees and the whole religious system had made an idol out of Sabbath keeping. Do any of you know what the principle of the Sabbath is? How many of you know what the Sabbath is? I'm not going to call on you. You can raise your hand. Okay, Alan, what's this? No, I'm just... The principle of Sabbath is found in the Ten Commandments. The idea of Sabbath goes right back to the Ten Commandments. In fact, it's the fourth commandment, and you can read about it in Exodus chapter 20, verse 8. Let me read. It says, "Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But on the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servants," that would be in our culture, that would be our employees, "nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath and made it holy." So the Sabbath is a 24-hour period of time that was reserved for rest, for worship, and for relationship building. The Sabbath was a day where you withdrew from all of the busyness and the activity and the stress and the chaos of life, and you engaged in three core practices: worship, rest, and relationship building. Have you ever needed a mental health day? Have any of you ever called in sick for a mental health day? You called in sick when you weren't really sick. I mean, you can be honest. Your boss isn't here. Unless you work for APU or Grace Church. But we all understand the idea of a mental health day, don't we? And have you noticed that when somebody says, hey, I just got to take a mental health day, you know, we kind of respond in the same way, don't we? We all kind of get this knowing, I get it. Every now and then you need to have a mental health day. Isn't that kind of our mindset? If you did it all the time, you know, you'd get fired. But every now and then we get it. Do you know what? We're not supposed to have a mental health day every now and then. We're supposed to have a mental health day 52 times a year. This was actually prescribed so intensely that it made it into the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt have a mental health day. Of course, it's not just mental health. It's a worship day and a relationship day and a rest day that equals mental health. You know, a number of years ago, a fighter pilot was practicing some extreme aerial maneuvers. And this pilot was doing such extreme maneuvers. And because of the maneuvers and the condition, she got a little bit disoriented and she didn't realize that she was flying upside down. And the next maneuver she was supposed to do was a maneuver where she would pull back on the throttle and do like a 90 degree ascent. But since she was flying upside down, she pulled up on the throttle and she plunged her plane right into the ground. The busyness and the pace of our lives today is such that a lot of us are flying upside down and we don't even realize it. We barely have time to think straight, let alone get our bearings and get oriented to what's actually real and happening in the world around us. Today, devout Jews still practice the idea of Sabbath keeping. The prescribed law was 24 hours that would begin on Friday at 5 p.m. and it would last until Saturday at 5 p.m. Saturday was the Jewish Sabbath day. In fact, when we were in Israel, 3/4 of the country shut down at 5 p.m. on Friday. It was crazy. In our little hotel that we stayed in, there was a fitness center. And the fitness center was open until about 9 or 10, I forget. So I went down there at about 5:10. Isaiah and I went down there, and it was closed. It was locked. The lights were out shortly after 5. All of the shops closed at 5. In fact, if we needed any service, we had to find either a Muslim or a Christian who was working who could help us. The next morning, which was Saturday morning, it was the Sabbath, we traveled from a city of Tiberias up by the Sea of Galilee in the north. We came down to Jerusalem in the south. There was no traffic. Jerusalem is a big, crowded, bustling city with tons of traffic. When we got to Jerusalem, we were whipping around corners. We were driving just fine. There's nobody there. The whole city shut down. When we got to the hotel, by the way, none of our rooms were ready, because they're not going to start working again until 5 p.m. on Saturday. Some of our people didn't get rooms until 10 p.m. at night. And you can't get upset with them. It's culture. It's honor. It's the Sabbath. Now, on Sunday morning, which was a regular workday for them, the streets looked like that again. And it was totally crazy and packed again. Well, in Luke chapter 6, the Pharisees had become really uptight about the Sabbath. And Jesus needed to engage in this conversation with them. If you're in Luke 6, or if you could find Luke 6, it says this. Luke 6, verse 1 says, one Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and his disciples began to pick some heads of grain, rub them in their hands, and eat the kernels. Some of the Pharisees asked, why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath? And listen, really quick, time out. Please, please, please. No matter how old you are today, you need this portal. If you're in junior high, Mads, not just Mads. If you're in junior high, if you're in high school, you need the principle of Sabbath in your life. So I want you to think right now, what will it look like for a high schooler to practice this idea of Sabbath? You need this if you're retired. And maybe you're retired and your schedule isn't as intense as it was when you were. Although some retired people are busier in retirement. But this isn't just for working adults. Every single person in the room needs this. This was important enough that it made it into the Ten Commandments. So we're going to see that Jesus doesn't care about a strict religious approach to this, but there's a principle inside it that applies to every single one of us. And regardless of your age, this portal can introduce you to a whole new dimension of life. But it's kind of a weird story. Jesus and the disciples are walking along through the grain fields. There was a law in the Old Testament that said, if you were wandering through somebody else's field, you could help yourself to the grain. You could eat as much as you wanted as long as you didn't actually take a scythe or a sickle and harvest the grain. So help yourself to my pantry is kind of the, because I'm generous, that's kind of the idea. So they're picking this grain. They're rubbing it in their hands to break off the shell. They pop a little kernel in their mouth. They start munching. And then the Pharisees freak out. And the Pharisees are saying, why are you doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath? Why would that have been unlawful? Well, according to rabbinic teachings, not the Bible, but the rabbis' amplifications of the Bible, there were 39 practices that were forbidden on the Sabbath. It's kind of like God told Moses to tell the people to honor the Sabbath. So we're going to help God out, and we're going to help Moses out, and we're going to give 39 ways that you can honor the Sabbath. Well, one of those restrictions was this. You could not farm on the Sabbath. You couldn't harvest grain. So, Jesus, when your disciples break open a little piece of grain and they pop that open and, you know, catch it in their mouth, they're farming. So make them stop. I mean, talk about getting uptight over the letter of the law. It's crazy. Well, Jesus' response is very fascinating because he doesn't blow off their concerns. He doesn't say, guys, knock it off. That doesn't matter anymore. You know, the Sabbath was a big deal. Under Old Testament law, Sabbath breaking was punishable by death. So Jesus didn't show up and say, that doesn't matter. He didn't show up and say, guys, that's old school. I'm here now. It all changes now that I'm here. That's not what he did. What he did was this. He said, listen, I commend your honoring of the Sabbath, but you have made an idol out of the Sabbath. You've turned it into a religious observance that it was never supposed to be. So I need you to step back because I'm going to put on my little iconoclast hat and I've got to shatter this thing. And I have to bring a greater understanding of what this is all about. In your 39 rules and regulations, you've completely missed the point of the Sabbath. And so in verse 3, listen to what he says. He says, have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry? He entered the house of God, and taking the consecrated bread, he ate what is lawful only for the priest to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. Then Jesus said to them, the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Fascinating response. When they held up this idol of Sabbath keeping, Jesus says, wait a minute, your perspective is wrong. We've got to shift this whole thing. Let's start with David. And so he reminded them of an interesting event from David's life from 1 Samuel 21. At this point in David's life, King Saul was going mad. He was going crazy with jealousy. Every leader likes to have a sharp, young, up-and-coming leader on their team because it makes the leader look good. But when the sharp, young, up-and-coming leader starts to eclipse the top leader sometimes gets nervous. And Saul got nervous. David was growing in popularity. He was growing in influence, and Saul couldn't handle it. So he eventually persecuted David to the point of trying to take his life. So David had no choice but to leave. While David was running away from Saul for good, he stopped by the town where the tabernacle had been set up. And he runs into the tabernacle, kind of breathless and trying to escape. And he says to the priest, do you guys have any bread? Do you have any bread for me and my men? We're running out of town and we don't have any supplies. And the priest said, no, we don't have any bread. In fact, the only bread we have here is the holy bread. But as you know, David, that's not lawful for you to eat. The holy bread was this. Every single Sabbath, 12 loaves of bread, one loaf per tribe, was baked and it was placed on the table in the holy place as an act of worship. The placing of the holy bread, if you're an old King James Version person, it's the show bread, the shoe bread that you've read in your King James Bibles. The holy bread was a reminder that God provides daily bread for his people. It would sit there all week until a fresh batch was replaced. And when the fresh batch was there, then the bread was given to the priest to eat. So the priest could eat the bread, but nobody else could. But you know what's fascinating? When the priest says, David, I'm sorry, I don't have any bread for you. All I have is the holy bread. David's like, perfect. I'll take it. Let me have it. And the priest did. The priest gave to David the bread that David was not supposed to eat. And you know what's fascinating to me is that God never rebuked David for doing that. Nowhere in the Bible is David ever condemned for eating the holy bread, even though the holy bread was forbidden. In fact, Jesus uses David's examples as precedent for his own actions. And so apparently the Sabbath law even though it was intense and it was a Ten Commandment law, the Sabbath law was able to be set aside in a pinch. But there were other times in David's life when he set aside the moral law. For instance, when he seduced Bathsheba, or when he arranged for the murder of Bathsheba's husband, and God was not okay with the moral law being set aside. So we have the Sabbath law that you can adjust if you need to, but we have the moral law that you're not allowed to adjust. God never says, hey, listen, I know you're in a tough spot right now, so a little bit of idol worship is okay. He doesn't say, I know things are tough. I get it. So if you have to do just a little bit of armed robbery and murder, it's okay just this once. He doesn't say that regarding the moral law, but he does seem to say that with the Sabbath law. So what does that mean? Again, it doesn't mean that the Sabbath law was unimportant. What it means is this. It means that the Sabbath law, the practice of the Sabbath, was a practice that wasn't really about the practice. It was about the deeper truth and principle that the practice represented. It was about the deeper lesson of the Sabbath. He didn't change the rule. He just changed the understanding of the rule. The Sabbath, in other words, was provisional. Let me say it that way. Have you heard of a provisional government? Something that's provisional means something that's temporary until the permanent shows up and makes the temporary obsolete. So that's what Jesus was saying about the Sabbath. And so he didn't say it's not important. He just said, you've missed the point. And then he winks at his disciples. I think he winks in the next verse. And it's like, boys, you're fine. Just keep eating. You're fine. Now, in the next verse, verse 6, it says, on another Sabbath, he healed a man with a damaged hand. And the Pharisees flipped out again. So Luke is telling us that this Sabbath iconoclasm will continue. It was a recurring theme. But we'll stop right there. And I want to focus this on you and me for the rest of the time here. Here's what's happened to you and me. Since strict Sabbath keeping was not about the strict Sabbath keeping, it was about what the keeping represented. We today, in our Western civilized enlightenment, we have set aside the strict practice of Sabbath without preserving the principle. We've set aside the legalism of it, and yet we've not replaced it with the essence of it. Hey, do you know what? You don't have to have a strict, literal 24 hours of rest, worship, and relationship building. If you have to play an occasional soccer match on a Sunday, that's okay. Now, culturally, that wouldn't have been okay even 25 years ago, probably. If you need to do a little bit of work on a Sunday afternoon, you can. If you have to make some plans and get some loose ends tied up on a Sunday, you're allowed to do that. But what you're not allowed to do, and this is assuming you want to access life, what you're not allowed to do is to live a Sabbath-less life. If you have a soccer match on a Sunday, if you have to do a little bit of work on a Sunday, if you have to get some things done and you can't clear a whole day like that, okay, fine. But the question is, where is your Sabbath? Where is your worship? And worship, by the way, that's individual worship and it's collective worship like with us. Where is your relationship building? Where's your rest? Jesus said to the Pharisees, listen, it's good that you've honored this, but you've made an idol out of it. And so I've got to correct your thinking. And then he says something profound. He says, the Son of Man, that was the title for Jesus, is Lord of the Sabbath. What does that mean? What does that mean? Does it just mean he's in charge, or what does it mean? I think it means this. I think it means that the Sabbath rest is not really about rest. It's about the rest that's found in Jesus. When he says that he's the Lord of Sabbath, I think it means this. I think it means if you think you have rest, but you don't have the rest that comes from knowing and experiencing Jesus Christ, you don't really have rest, no matter how much time you've taken off. And conversely, I think it means that if you have touched the presence of Jesus Christ, you have rest, even if things haven't slowed down quite as much as you want them to. Have you experienced that? It's really awesome to have a wonderful lazy day off, isn't it? It's really awesome to binge watch Netflix once in a while. But have you ever had a lazy day off that didn't restore the soul? Have you had that? And then on the other hand, have you ever had a moment in the presence of God where even though life was crazy, all of a sudden you were on vacation and you were restored and you were whole? If I had to choose a day of binge watching Netflix over 1 minute of truly touching the presence of God, I'd take the touch. And if you're thinking, well, there's some pretty good Netflix programs out there. No, you haven't touched the presence in a while. There's something about touching the presence of God. Psalm 84:10 says, one day in your courts is better than 1,000 anywhere else. Now, I'm not lobbying for just a moment of his presence versus a Sabbath. We need a Sabbath. In fact, let's talk a little bit more. Let me give you a couple of kind of pictures or thoughts about where the Sabbath portal takes us. Now, granted, it might not be a 24 literal, strict, legalistic hours, but when you practice Sabbath, where does it take us? What does it do for us? Well, number one, a couple thoughts here. Number one, it reorients us to God's story. See, you're 24-7 in your life story. We're 24-7 in our work, our pace, our schedule, our busyness, the world around us. Sabbath reorients us to God's story. When the Pharisees were like, hey, we need to talk about the Sabbath, Jesus was like, perfect, let's start with David. Let's start by connecting you to a story that preceded you and will succeed you. It started long before you got here, and it's going to continue long after you're gone. Sabbath reminds us that we can look up from our smaller lives and connect with the greater story. Do you know what the Sabbath does? It reminds me that I'm not just the pastor of a little church in Laverne. Now, I am that. But I am also, and Sabbath helps me see this, I am a part of the chain of church leadership that began when Jesus commissioned the church. I'm carrying a baton in my generation. I'm surrounded by a cloud of witnesses. I have a race to run, and it matters that I run it. And you do too. The Sabbath portal reminds you that you are not just a business person. You are not just an educator. You are not just a mom. You are connected to something so much greater. You are an emissary. You're an ambassador of a greater kingdom. In fact, you're an ambassador of the kingdom that our world is crying out for, even if they don't know that's what it is that they're crying out for. Listen, this isn't narcissism. We're not creating a little self, you know, inflated reality to live in. This is the restoration of soul that occurs in the Sabbath. In fact, that's number two. Sabbath reinflates the soul. If you've read Psalm 23, you'll remember that David said that being in God's presence restored his soul. So Sabbath rest is about worship, but it's also about the soul. See, in your soul, you are spirit, but you're also will. You're also emotion. I think on the Sabbath, I think you should read poetry. I think you should look at some art. I think you should listen to great music. And if you hate music, I think you should watch a really inspiring movie. I think you need to have an awesome conversation. And our family will say, hey, open the vault. All right, babe, open the vault. Tell me, what's going on inside there? Sabbath is a time to have a deep conversation. Sabbath is a time to walk on the beach. Whatever you need to do to get your soul reinflated, reconnected, reoriented, Sabbath does that for us. However you have to chop it up or make it work or make it fix, a regular practice of this, it reinflates the soul. Number three, a couple more. Number three, it frees us from the compulsive need to succeed. There's an author and a literary critic named Judith Shulevich. And she wrote a story for the New York Times recently called Bring Back the Sabbath. In this article, Shulevich talked about something that she called the eternal internal murmur of self-reproach. It's kind of a mouthful. The eternal internal murmur of self-reproach. What is that? That's the voice in your head that never shuts up, that always tells you that you're not enough. If you want a pop culture picture, it's Rocky. In the first Rocky movie, which, by the way, came out in 1976, 40 years ago. But in the first Rocky film, I don't know if any of you remember this, but this reporter asks him, Rocky, why are you doing this? Why are you going to risk your life in the ring with Apollo Creed? You know what he said? He said, I want to go the distance so that I'll know I'm not a bum. What is that? That's the internal murmur of self-reproach. Rocky, you're a bum. And unless you do something to prove to the world that you're not a bum, that's all you'll ever be. That voice never shuts off. That voice never takes a break on its own. That voice drives us and pushes us and compels us. There's another old film, Chariots of Fire, which is actually a film about the Sabbath. In this particular film, there are two men, two sprinters. One man is driven. He's the world champion in the 100-yard dash. We don't run 100 yards anymore. Quick track trivia. We run 100 meters. If you ever want to convert your 100-yard track time, you older guys, since you still brag about your times and your times get faster every year as you get older, add 9/10 of a second to your 100-yard time, and that gives you roughly your 100-meter time. So at this time, the guy had set a world record of 10 seconds in the 100 yards. So if you add 9/10 of a second, that gives you 10.9. Usain Bolt, who holds the world record in the 100 meters, runs it in 9.58, so he runs it 1.5 seconds faster, which you didn't need to know, but the Olympics are coming up, so we got to get geared up for that. But in this film, the first guy is driven, and here's what he says. Here's the point. He says, I have 10 seconds to justify my existence. Are you kidding me? You have 10 seconds to prove that you should be alive. And if you fail in your 10 seconds, you're worthless. One man is driven. The other man practices Sabbath. In fact, to the point that he refuses to run on the Sabbath. It wouldn't have been a sin. Well, for him, it would have been because it was a matter of conscience for him. He could have run on the Sabbath. God wouldn't have disowned him if he had. But that man had a different perspective. He said, the eyes of the only one who really matter have already seen me, and he has called me good. And I don't need 10 seconds to justify my existence. I can withdraw. I can honor my vow to God. I can honor this principle. And nobody in the world will ever know how great I am, but he knows. It's a huge difference. The Sabbath turns off that voice of self-reproach. See, Sabbath not only invites us from physical rest from our work, but it invites us into emotional rest from the need to prove ourselves in our work. You don't need another promotion to be more accepted. You don't need to hit it a little bit bigger or make a little bit more or go a little bit further or expand your company or get one more degree or one more award to be more accepted or more loved. Sabbath reconnects us to the voice that says you are good. That's number four. This is my last point. Sabbath enables us to see the good. Did you remember in the Ten Commandments passage that it connected the idea of Sabbath to the order of creation? Do you remember that? So according to that whole arrangement, God created the world in 6 days. And then on the seventh day, he rested. What does that mean? Was God tired? Was God worn out? No, that's not what it means. What did God say after every significant act of creation? Do you remember? He said it was good. And then after he had gotten the whole world arranged the way he wanted it, he said it was very good. And then it says he rested. You don't need to look at that verse as a laborer. You need to look at that verse as an artist. If you're an artist, or if you're a writer, or if you're a composer, you work on your composition until you reach a point where you are satisfied with what you have produced. And you look around and you realize, I could keep working forever. Did you notice that God didn't say creation was perfect? It wasn't perfect. It needed managers. That was Adam and Eve's job. There was a serpent running around in the garden. The world wasn't perfect, but the world was good. You can always create a little bit more. You can always edit forever. But there comes a point for every artist when you realize my work is good. I am satisfied with my creation and I am now resting from creating. So here's what Sabbath does. Sabbath brings us back into that space where there's an awareness that God sees the good. There's an awareness that I don't have to prove myself anymore. God has looked at me and said, you're good. Because of how I created you, because of who I made you to be, because of what Jesus did on your behalf, I look at you through the grid of Jesus Christ. I look at you through the grid of the potential I put in you, and I declare, you are good. You are enough. You've succeeded. I'm pleased with you. No, you're not perfect. Forget about that. You're good. I'm yours. Sabbath is a portal that connects us to that reality that says you're not a bum. You don't have to be driven. You don't have to be perfect. You can pause. The world's going to keep going on if you pause and let me reinflate your soul. And here's my conclusion today. Sabbath is a combination of worship, rest, and relationship building. So sometimes, I guess I'm kind of a teacher, but I'm not like officially a teacher. And so I can't assign homework, but I so wish I could. I wish I could give you homework this week. And I wish that you would take some time, whether you're in junior high or whether you're a joint heir. And I wish that you would take time to think, how will I integrate a practice of worship, relationship building, and rest into my schedule? And you're going to have to schedule it. And you're going to have to fight to preserve it. And you're going to have to reorder your world. You're going to have to let go of certain things. You might not be able to play every single soccer match. You might not be able to be as busy as you are. You might have to say no, but would you please take time to say, have I been violating the Sabbath? See, under Old Testament law, it was punishable by death. Now, of course, we don't do that. Of course, that didn't carry into the New Testament, but I think the principle still did. I think if you live a perpetually Sabbath-less life, there's a death that gets released into our lives. Are you a better mom when you're frazzled and rushed and stressed and overwhelmed? Are you more in love with your spouse when you're pushed to the breaking point and you can barely see straight because you're so busy? Are you a better individual? Are you a better human being when you're coming unhinged because you're like a rubber band stretched until you're going to break? No. But when you regroup, when you rediscover, okay, this is who I am. This is what I'm a part of. My soul's come back to life like a spiritual mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Okay, I have perspective again. You're better. You're more alive. You're more available to be used by God. It changes everything. It unlocks the genie. It opens up the doorway to Narnia. It's a portal into a whole greater reality.